Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, December 20th, 2019 edition of the News Gazette, and we'll begin on the front page with a piece from the University of Illinois called A Sweet Recreation. UI pastry chef's Altgelt Hall, made out of gingerbread, was daunting. By Julie Wirth Urbana. On this Altgelt Hall, the tile roof is red icing. The windows are sucrose, and the trees are chocolate-covered grape stems. A gingerbread version of the historic University of Illinois building starred in this year's holiday video greeting from Chancellor Robert Jones, custom-made by UI housing pastry chef Eric Larson. It only took, about 64 hours to create, 8 hours a day for 8 days, by Larson's estimation. It was daunting, he said Thursday. Larson whipped up creative projects before, including a chocolate motorcycle sculpture for a UI retiree who loved his bike, and a 2-foot-tall cake version of Cincinnati's baseball stadium for retiring UI housing director Jack Collins, a Reds fan. So he agreed to give the gingerbread Altgelt a shot. It sounded like something that would be fun to do, said Larson, who's worked at the UI for 25 years. Sometimes a change of pace is kind of fun. It took a little longer than he expected. Larson realized right away that he needed some kind of 3D template, which he crafted out of cardboard. He used the pieces to create the gingerbread structure. They asked me for something that was a realistic-looking building. I knew I couldn't get away with just putting candies all over it and hiding stuff, he said. He used tricks to mimic the features on the Romanesque Revival building, which was completed in 1897. The windows were constructed with melted isomalt, which looks like table sugar, but is made of sucrose and is sturdier because it doesn't absorb water, he said. He dipped grape stems in chocolate for the trees and used food coloring to tint cornflakes tossed in marshmallow and butter to create leaves on the powdered sugar snow. Some features proved more challenging, including the curved pillars lining Altgelt's signature tower, which took 3 or 4 tries. Larson baked them around dowel rods, but the dough kept stretching and stuck to the rods, he said. I don't want to make anything ever again that's got curves, he said. The biggest headache was Altgelt's roof, which kept sloping too much and had to be reinforced with shims, he said. The final touch was a gingerbread cookie version of the alma mater sculpture out front, which was the star of the video spot. It shows Jones walking past the gingerbread Altgelt, then sneaking a bite of the alma cookie and putting it back, minus one arm. Larson made about 19 cookies for the many takes involved in the recording, some with arms pre-bitten off and fake teeth marks made with a fluted cookie cutter, he said. It looked more convincing than the real thing, he said. We tried biting a cookie and seeing how real it looked, but it broke a whole section off, he said. Jones wasn't the only one sneaking a bite. The gingerbread Altgelt was on display at the Illini Union this week, and somebody bit Alma's head off, said campus spokeswoman Robin Kaler, who oversaw production of the video greeting with Allison Vance. On Thursday, the headless alma mater had been replaced with a Lovey Mater cookie created by Larson, essentially Alma with Lovey Smith beard. The other Alma cookies were used up in filming of the video, and they were delicious, according to Kaler, who had the enviable job of eating the discards from the various takes. The Chancellor ate 7 arms and I ate 7 cookies, she said. Next year's greeting will have a different theme, but Larson is open to making gingerbread versions of other iconic campus buildings, such as the Helene Gateway or Illini Union, but not Folinger Auditorium. While he was working on the Altgelt model, he'd study other buildings as he drove around campus and decided he would never build anything with a curved roof. Andrew Gleason, who coordinates video production at the UI, originally wanted Larson to make the entire quad, Kaler said. That would take a lot more time and a lot more people to create, Larson said. You can watch the holiday video or get Larson's gingerbread house recipe on the UI website, illinois.edu. And the next piece is from the Champaign County Sheriff's Office called Woman Sues Over Pat-Down. Federal suit accuses deputy of touching private areas by Ben Zingerman, Champaign. A 27-year-old woman is suing the Champaign County Sheriff's Office and accusing a deputy of a highly intrusive pat-down search. In her 5-count federal lawsuit, Wylesha Ayers alleges that her Fourth Amendment right against an unreasonable search was violated and that it inflicted on her humiliation, degradation, emotional pain, and suffering. For reasons beyond me, he's touching Ms. Ayers' private areas, and in our view, it's completely unjustifiable, said her lawyer, Shanur Nathan. The deputy was wearing a body camera, and according to Nathan, in our view, the body camera footage plainly shows an improper search was done. The footage, obtained by the News Gazette, shows Deputy Corey Christensen patting down Ayers. Don't touch my butt, please, Ayers says. Christensen tells Ayers he was just making sure she didn't have any weapons. The search came after he pulled her over at 9:56 p.m., May 8th, on Dobbins Drive in Champaign. Deputy Corey Floyd later arrived at the scene, the suit states. In the video, Christensen tells Ayers he stopped her because her license plate had expired 2 months earlier. After returning to his car, he learns that her driver's license has been expired for over a year. He then tells the other deputy that he's going to search for marijuana. I can smell it, smell the weed, he says. Once he returns to Ayers' car, he asks her to step out. He also asks if she has any weapons, explains that she has an expired driver's license, and asks about the smell of weed. I had smoked earlier, Ayers said. Is there anything in the car that you're aware of? Christensen asks. Nope, nothing, she responds. After patting her down, he searches her car, where another woman is in the front passenger seat and two children are in the back seats. He doesn't find anything and gives Ayers a citation for not having a valid license. The lawsuit argues that the officers provided no basis for the officers to touch Ayers. They found no drugs, guns, or other weapons on plaintiff and had no reasonable basis to suspect that such contraband would be located on her, the lawsuit says. This could have been avoided by simply asking for a female officer to come do this highly invasive body search, Nathan said. The sheriff's office declined to comment, but in its formal response to the lawsuit, it denied that the officers improperly touched Ayers, that they didn't provide a basis for the search, and that they didn't have reasonable suspicion. Before approaching Ayers to search her and her vehicle, Christensen claims she's a gang member. In 2012, she was found guilty of robbery. A year earlier, she was found guilty of residential burglary. In addition to the deputies, the lawsuit names the Sheriff's Office and Champaign County. It alleges Fourth Amendment violations, a failure to intervene, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. The trial isn't scheduled to begin until March 2021. And next, Hair Today, Gone Tomorrow. Urbana Middle School teacher Zach Booth reacted as he is handed the hair being shaved off his head at an assembly Thursday at the school. The school's student council raised about $1,300 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, beating its $1,200 goal. As a reward, 9 staffers had their heads shaved, and about 24 others got pies in the face at the assembly. And next, from Northeast Urbana Traffic Stop, Man Facing Drug, Weapons Charges After a Police Chase by Mary Shank, Urbana. An Urbana man who ran from state troopers after a traffic stop Wednesday, allegedly pitching a duffel bag filled with cannabis along the way, is in the Champaign County Jail on a variety of charges. State's attorney Julia Reitz said Illinois State Police arrested O'Shea Cotton, 22, who listed an address in the 700 block of MacArthur Drive, after finding a total of 9 pounds of cannabis, 3 guns, and ammunition in his possession. As a convicted felon, Cotton is not allowed to have guns or ammunition, and the amount of cannabis he had qualified him to be charged with a Class 1 felony. Reitz said Cotton's run-in with police started about 10:50 a.m. Wednesday in the area of U.S. 45 and Airport Road in northeast Urbana. After seeing Cotton allegedly run a red light, a trooper began to follow him. Cotton slowed and jumped from the moving van with a duffel bag in hand and ran, Reitz said. Troopers ordered him to stop, but he kept running, tossing the bag as he ran. In the duffel bag, troopers found 7 bags of a green leafy substance that field tested positive for cannabis and weighed a total of 3.4 pounds, Reitz said. Troopers followed him to a house in the 500 block of Airport Road and arrested him there. After smelling the strong odor of cannabis coming from the house, they obtained a search warrant and went back later to look around. During the search, they found 3 handguns, 2 of which were stolen, 91 rounds of handgun ammunition, and another bag containing 5.7 pounds of cannabis, Reitz said. On Thursday, her office filed 3 counts of aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon against Cotton for allegedly possessing the guns, 1 count of aggravated unlawful possession of ammunition by a felon, and 2 counts of possession with intent to deliver cannabis for the drugs found in the duffel bag and in the house. The weapons counts carries a mandatory prison term of between 3 and 14 years for Cotton, based on his prior record. In 2016, Cotton was implicated in the gang-related shooting death of Erica Cox Bailey of Champaign. The 30-year-old woman was walking on a city street not far from her home when she was killed by a shot from a passing car that was intended for another man. After her alleged shooter, Shamario Brown, was acquitted by a jury in early 2017 of her murder, the state allowed Cotton to plead guilty to aggravated unlawful use of weapons for a sentence of probation and more than a year served in the county jail. He is still serving that sentence. Also charged with possession with intent to deliver cannabis was Kaisha Richardson, 22, the woman living at the house on Airport Road, where police found Cotton and the 5.7 pounds of cannabis. Cotton and Richardson were arraigned on their respective charges Thursday by Judge Adam Dill. Both were told to return to court December 31st. Cotton is being held in lieu of $200,000 bond and Richardson on $25,000 bond. And next we have a piece written by Carolyn Hacks called Wise to Reach Out to X for Closure. Dear Carolyn, is it ever okay to reach out to an ex for closure? We broke up very suddenly. I've had a hard time moving on, and I suspect part of that is about how fast it all felt and how I feel like I didn't say everything I wanted to say. It seems like everyone under the sun says it's a terrible idea to reach out to an ex and break no contact, and that closure isn't real, so don't bother. What's your take? Not moving on. Closure is what you think it is, so whether it's real depends on whether you're realistic. How's that for nothing? Though I suppose in the realm of nothingness, what everyone under the sun says has no rival. If your ex asked for no contact, then I agree with everyone. Otherwise, the wisdom of reaching out depends on variables not everyone can know. Instead of abstracting yourself into unreachable knots, Do something practical. Write down all those things you wanted to say but didn't, couldn't. Just empty it all out into a letter and stash it somewhere safe. Then leave it there. A week, a month, up to you. Just make sure you let it age. See how you feel just from forming the words. If loose threads still nag at you at the end of the rest period, reread what you wrote. Is it still what you wish you could have said? Any cringing? Any relief at not having sent it? Give it a hard edit. Then let it rest again. Repeat this process until you either feel at peace or can sum up your remaining frustration in a concept or two. If it's the latter, then ask yourself what you would hope to accomplish by saying this to your ex, and whether that outcome is even possible. There's no right answer. And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called Impeachment Politics. After the U.S. House voted to impeach President Donald Trump, it appears there may or may not be a trial in the Senate. Democratic members of the House finally achieved their goal of approving articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump. Under the traditional process, a trial would follow in the U.S. Senate. But a day after the House approved impeachment, Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi raised doubts about whether she will let a Senate trial to take place. Expressing objections to its procedures, Pelosi said she may not forward the impeachment articles to the 100-member body, a requirement before it can proceed. "So far, we haven't seen anything that looks fair to us," she said. "But right now, the president is impeached." It should come as no surprise that Pelosi, speaking for Democrats who hold a majority in the House, is unhappy with how the majority Republican Senate plans to proceed. Senate Republicans were equally unhappy with how the Democratic-controlled House conducted itself. It's pretty much an undisputed fact that Trump's acquittal in the Senate is foreordained. But it was equally predictable that Trump's impeachment in the House was foreordained. That's what happens when partisan politics reigns supreme in a process that was intended to be as bipartisan as it is serious. But this dispute has been about politics all along, specifically the 2016 election and the 2020 election. Democrats were horrified that Trump won in 2016, and they're fearful that he'll win again in 2020. The fact that Trump defeated Hillary Clinton, the Democrats' president-in-waiting, was a devastating blow, all the more so because virtually all the polls predicted an easy Clinton victory. One, of course, could just as easily argue that Clinton lost the presidential race more than Trump won it. Whatever the analysis, Trump came out on top in November 2016. Since then, he's been relentlessly antagonizing the Democrats to the point that they have been publicly discussing and planning his impeachment ever since. That time came when Democrats won a House majority in the 2018 election. They thought the Russian collusion case would be their ticket to impeachment salvation, but the Mueller report put an end to that. Then came the Ukraine controversy, where Democrats alleged that Trump committed an impeachable offense when he allegedly threatened to withhold military aid until Ukraine's president agreed to launch an investigation that would potentially embarrass one of Trump's Democratic presidential opponents, former Vice President Joe Biden. "Bribery," they charged. "Extortion," they shrieked. The facts ultimately did not bear out either of those criminal acts. In the end, Democrats approved two impeachment articles. Neither alleged specific violations of law in a process that is predicated on, as the Constitution states, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Instead, they allege Trump engaged in abuse of power, a charge so vague that constitutional scholar Jonathan Turley said every president could be subjected to it. Turley warned House members that if they impeached Trump on such a nebulous charge, it would be your abuse of power. House Democrats' second impeachment charge alleges obstruction of Congress in its investigation. Did Trump obstruct the investigation? He certainly did, specifically invoking executive privilege. The usual manner of resolving that type of separation of powers standoff between Congress and the executive branch is to litigate the issue in the courts. Whichever side has a stronger legal argument wins. If Trump had lost in the courts and still refused to comply with impeachment investigation requests, the House would be within its authority to impeach. But the House refused to challenge the matter in the courts, instead rushing to meet a self-imposed Christmas impeachment deadline. Despite all of their zeal, Democrats have failed to get the goods on their target in the White House. Removing Trump is not going to happen, and in fact, it was never going to happen, given the highly politicized manner in which impeachment was initiated. So instead, members of both parties are engaged in the kind of gamesmanship more typically associated with a political campaign than the most serious process the Constitution contemplates. Pelosi made that clear when she exclaimed, "The president is impeached." In other words, he's been tarred with the scarlet eye, a burden Pelosi and the Democrats hope, and apparently believe, will make his reelection impossible. In fact, it may. Trump is hard for many people to take, his sometimes ill-conceived words and impulsive actions drawing scorn. But choosing a president does not occur in a vacuum. It's a choice. Many of those who blanched at the prospect of a Trump presidency didn't think he looked quite as bad standing next to Clinton. Democrats may revere her, but Clinton's personal negatives exceeded Trump's. Many voters also may not appreciate Democrats trying to negate their 2016 ballot through impeachment. Elections, after all, matter. It is no small thing to try to wipe out the results of a presidential election. Many critics argued Democrats would have been better off to focus on defeating an eminently beatable Trump in 2020. But for a variety of reasons, they simply could not restrain themselves. Now that she has two impeachment articles in the bank, Pelosi finally is restraining herself, raising the prospect of no trial. That, too, is a two-edged sword, one that would make clear this process was legally flawed and politically suspect from the get-go. And we'll turn now to the From Our Readers section and begin with a piece written by Don Waller of Urbana called Doctor Meetings Are Too Short. Management at Carle has evidently implemented new rules for how they interact with and treat patients, ostensibly to reduce the burden on doctors, of which they have too few, by reducing the amount of time they spend treating patients. And that again was written by Don Waller of Urbana. The next piece is written by Karen Aram of Urbana, called One Party System Crushing Everyone. There is a current new direction the Democrats are forced to take to clean up their image. We shouldn't be fooled, though. It's the position many have been taking for some time now, given they aren't able to hide it any longer. The strategy? Point out the division within the party and how necessary it is to vote and support the new left wing of the Democratic Party, i.e. Sanders, Warren, Gabbard, AOC, etc., as they battle the conservative Pelosi, Adam Schiff, Schumer, etc., and all the other warmongers who supported everything the Republicans have been doing with an occasional complaint to maintain the image of liberal. It shows a lack of comprehension and acknowledgement that our institutions are broken, our capitalist system of empire is dying, and a total lack of knowledge related to history and power. These leaders aren't ignorant or stupid, but they are counting on our ignorance, our political illiteracy, as well as our focus on positive thinking to continue this circus of elections, ensuring our elitist oligarchs maintain power under our two-headed, one-party system, thus ensuring a third party does not challenge their power. Our foreign policy continues as if on autopilot. It matters not which of the two-party system is in power. The goal, to keep us focused on individuals as the U.S. government continues to destroy and impoverish, both here and abroad, as if removal of specific individuals will eliminate the rot of our system, given the corporate capitalist powers behind the throne. And that again was written by Karen Arum of Urbana. And the last from our reader's piece is written by Michael Machula of Urbana, and it's called Trump Critics Not Driven by Hatred. In his December 15th letter, Jim Keenan made the claim that quid pro quo is Latin for not illegal. Unfortunately, Keenan is misinformed. From the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, quid pro quo, noun, something given or received for something else. That definition is very broad and could cover things that are legal or illegal. Keenan used the example of paying someone to mow a lawn is a quid pro quo. Calling that personal service would be more concise. Committing a criminal act in exchange for money is another thing of value is also a quid pro quo. Are they the same? Also, Keenan claimed that those that are not MAGA faithful have blind hatred of their leader. The term hatred is frequently used by those that worship Trump to describe those that are not one of his partisan worshipers. My opinion of President Trump is not one of hatred, but disgust and loathing based on what he has said and done since becoming president. I cannot enumerate in 250 words other reasons, but here is a small sample. Vulgar, gauche, corrupt, cruel, anything but presidential, and his curious relationship with Russia versus this nation. Those things were not lost on the coherent majority of 65 million Democratic voters versus 62 million MAGA voters in 2016. In 2016, 90 million indifferent voters stayed home. Many of that number who were absent in 2016 were disgusted with Trump and will turn up in 2020. And again, that was written by Michael Machula of Urbana. And now in the history section, in area history in 1919, in cooperation with the State Fire Marshal's Office to reduce the Christmas tree hazard in Champaign homes, Fire Chief John Eli advised all people to use electric lighting on the trees instead of candles. For those who must use candles, the following advice was given. Be sure the tree sets firmly in an adequate base so it will not tip. Place it a safe distance from curtains and other furnishings. Don't leave a lighted tree unattended. Don't let children touch a lighted tree. Don't put cotton resembling snow under the tree. And in 1969, the Urbana Golf and Country Club, without a home for the previous 20 months after a May 1968 fire, was to hold its Christmas ball in its newly rebuilt home that night. And in 2004, a Champaign couple was donating $400,000 toward the campaign to restore the Champaign County Courthouse clock and bell tower to its original height and look. Jack and Marjorie Richmond of Champaign were making the donation, which was to be announced late that morning at the courthouse. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, December 20th, 2019 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.